Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're going to commence with a readings from the sixth canto, summarizing chapters 6, 7, 8, and, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So as you recall, yesterday we were hearing about Daksha and the sacrifice, repeated conviction of his sons to avoid propagating the species, to fill up the universe. And so to whom did Daksha turn? No, Narada was the problem. What did he do? Since his sons wouldn't help him procreate. Daughters. He got 60 daughters to help him. Yes, so now we're going into another pastime, beginning here with a summary for 6.7. Who would like to read? Do we have the microphone ready? Yes, please go ahead and read.
As related in this chapter, Indra, the king of heaven, committed an offense at the feet of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Brihaspati therefore left the demigods, who then had no priest. Excuse me. However, at the request of the demigods, Vishvarupa, the son of the Brahmana Twashta, became their priest.
Okay, that's the summary of the summary. Now here are the details.
Once upon a time, Indra, the king of demigods, was sitting with his wife, Sachi Devi, and being praised by various demigods like the Siddhas, Charnas, and Gandharvas, when Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, entered the assembly. Indra, being too absorbed in material opulence, forgot himself and did not respect Brihaspati, who thus became aware of Indra's pride in his material opulence and immediately disappeared from the assembly to teach him a lesson. Indra became most repentant, understanding that because of his opulence, he had forgotten to respect his spiritual master. He left the palace to beg pardon from his spiritual master, but could not find Brihaspati anywhere.
Because of his disrespectful behavior towards his spiritual master, Indra lost all his opulence and was conquered by the demons, who defeated the demigods in a great fight and occupied Indra's throne. King Indra, along with the other demigods, later took the shelter of Lord Brahma. Understanding the situation, Lord Brahma chastised the demigods for their offense to their spiritual master. Following Lord Brahma's order, the demigods accepted Vishwarupa, who was a Brahmana and the son of Twasta, as their priest. Then they performed yagyas under the priesthood of Vishwarupa and were able to conquer the demons.
Good. Okay. So, more intrigue with the demigods. Always getting in trouble. Please go ahead to the next chapter. We'll just read this briefly. We're not going to read all the details there. Just, in fact, you go on to the next chapter. So Indra offended Brihaspati by not showing respect, something like what Shiva offended Daksha in the fourth canto. So Brihaspati left. He just left the demigods, and they were without spiritual guidance. So he turned to this Twasta and Vishvarupa. So Vishvarupa, although they had some inclination towards the demoniac side, the enemies of the demigods, they agreed that Vishvarupa could become the priest because the demigods were so much in peril. And then by his help, they were able to drive out the demons. So one of the ways Vishvarupa helped is to give the Narayan Kavacha these prayers for protection. So that's the eighth chapter of the sixth canto. And those are good if you're ever having problems in your life, like with somebody harassing you, like a professor or a neighbor or some unpleasant person. So that's chapter 8 of the sixth canto. Now we go on to chapter 9. Who would like to read?
Chapter 9.
Shashi?
As described in this chapter, Indra, the king of heaven, killed Vishwarupa, and therefore Vishwarupa's father performed a yagna to kill Indra. When Vritasura appeared from that yagna, the demigods, in fear, sought shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and glorified him.
Yes. Okay, so this section of Bhagavatam is about Vritasura. He's really the hero.
Because of affection for the demons, Vishwarupa secretly supplied them the remnants of yagna. When Indra learned about this, he beheaded Vishwarupa. But he later regretted killing Vishwarupa because Vishwarupa was a Brahmin. Although competent to neutralize the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana, Indra did not do so. Instead, he accepted the reactions. Later, he distributed these reactions among the land, water, trees, and women in general. Since the land accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions, a portion of the land turned into desert. The trees were also given 1/4 of the sinful reactions, and therefore they drip sap, which is prohibited for drinking. Because women accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions, they are untouchable during their menstruational period. Since water was also infested with sinful reaction, when bubbles appear in water, it cannot be used for any purpose.
After Vishwarupa was killed, his father, Drashta, performed a sacrifice to kill King Indra. Unfortunately, if mantras are chanted irregularly, they yield an opposite result. This happened when Drashta performed this yagya. While performing the sacrifice to kill King Indra, Drashta chanted a mantra to increase Indra's enemies, but because he chanted the mantra wrong, the sacrifice produced an asura named Vritasura, of whom Indra was the enemy. When Vritasura was generated from the sacrifice, his fierce features made the whole world afraid, and his personal effulgence diminished even the power of the demigods. Finding no other means of protection, the demigods began to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the enjoyer of all the results of sacrifice, who is supreme throughout the entire universe. The demigods all worshipped him because ultimately no one but him can protect a living entity from fear and danger. Seeking shelter of a demigod instead of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead is compared to trying to cross the ocean by grasping the tail of a dog. A dog can swim, but that does not mean that one can cross the ocean by grasping a dog's tail.
Being pleased with the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advised them to approach the Dichi to beg him for the bones of his own body. The Dichi would comply with the request of the demigods, and with the help of his bones, Vritasura could be killed.
Mm-hmm. So, see all these politics going on, all this controversy. So again, Vishwarupa did a great job as the new priest of the demigods. But he had this partiality towards their enemies. So after the sacrifice, he would offer some of the, during the sacrifice, he would offer some to the demons secretly. And so Indra found out about this, and, you know, to try to rectify this situation, he cut off his head. Very tactfully. This caused a great sinful reaction. Remember, Brahmatirtha Prabhu was speaking last week about getting up, committing murder, and then going to Tulsi Arti. So we can counteract the sin by circumambulating. So the sin of killing the Brahmin is very great. And in Indra's case, he did not go to Tulsi Arti, but rather he distributed this sinful reaction to the land, trees, water, and women, as we read. So in this way, Indra was able to cleanse himself of this sinful reaction from killing Vishwarupa. But they were in trouble again because of lack of a spiritual master. So again, they were being overrun. And they appealed to Krishna, or to Vishnu, as so often happens. So this is the mentality of the demigods. You just have to understand. They have so much material opulence that they forget about Vishnu until they get in trouble. Then they remember Vishnu again. This pattern happens again and again in the Puranas. So who can think of some other examples? Times when they went to what's that? Bali Maharaj? How the demigods turned to Lord Vishnu for help. All right. Others? Pardon what? Hiranyaksha, yes, in the third canto. There's the eighth canto, the third canto. When Krishna himself descended in the tenth canto, yes. The earth was in trouble, so they came to Lord Vishnu. So this is the pattern. In human terms, it is said that there are no atheists in foxholes. In the battlefield, they dig these little trenches to protect themselves from the bullets. They're called foxholes. Although one may not be a theist before the battle, when the bullets are flying and they're huddling in your foxhole, then one prays to God. In 1973, I believe, there was a space journey, Apollo 13. So this was part of a series of manned expeditions to the moon. But on this particular flight, after they had left Earth, and they were en route to the moon, there was an explosion in the vehicle, and the main vehicle became uninhabitable. So they all had to cram into the little landing vehicle and try to survive. So there was great peril for the lives of these three astronauts at that time. And President Nixon came on the media and said, "Everyone please pray for the safe return of the astronauts." So Prabhupada's comment was, they did not consult God before sending up the air rocket ship. So this is the mentality that we see in the demigods. They are preoccupied with other things until they get in trouble. Then they turn to God. So this is a good lesson. All right. Now, we'll just actually go ahead to today's verse, if you'd be so kind, Nimai Pandit. Yes, it is 11, verse 11 in chapter 10. So Lord Vishnu, as always, helps the demigods, and he tells them, yes, you need to go to Dadichi Muni. Go to Dadichi Muni and ask him for his bones. Then you can create a weapon that will enable you to defeat this terrible enemy of yours, Vritasura. So, of course, backing up a bit again. Tvastha, after his son Vishwarupa was killed, performed a sacrifice, and out of it came this terrible demon, Vritasura. So Vritasura was so powerful just by his presence. The demigods were all terrified and went to Lord Vishnu. So this is in response. Lord Vishnu says, you need a special weapon, this thunderbolt weapon that you can get only from the bones of Dadichi Muni. So the topic of our class today is self-sacrifice, and the discussion will be about Dadichi Muni, this verse. So let's just chant the four lines, please. Evam krita vyavasito, evam krita vyavasito, tadyam artarvanastanum, Pare Bhagavati Brahmani, Atmanam Sanayan Jahau, Evam Krita Vyavasito, Tadyan Artarvanastanum, Pare Bhagavati Brahmani, Atmanam sanayan jahau, evam krita vyavasito, tadyan atarvanastanum, pare bhagavati brahmani, atmanam sanayan jahau. Please chant. Amtitya Bravisito Dadyan Arta Banastanum Hare Bhagavati Brahmani Atmanam Sanayan Jahau. evam krita vyavasito dadyan atpar vanastanum pare bhagavati brahmani atmanam sanayanjaho. Evam krita vyavasito dadyan atarvanastanum pare brahmati brahmani atmanam sanayanjaho. Vaishnavis, anyone? Evam krita vyavasito tadyan atarvanastanum pare bhagavati brahmani atmanam sanayanjaho. Shibadarayani uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, evam, thus, kritavyavasitaha, making certain of what to do in giving his body to the demigods, dadyan dadichi muni atharvanaha, the son of Atavarha, tanum, his body, pare, to the Supreme, Bhagavati, personality of Godhead, Brahmani, the Supreme Brahman, Atmanam, himself, the Spirit Soul, Sanayan, offering, Jahau, gave up. Translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Dadichi Muni, the son of Atharva, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. Now it's interesting. Before we read the purport, let's go back to the translations. Leading up to this, before he comes to this decision, scroll up to five or so. Text one. Let's just read what Dadichi Muni said to the demigods first. It's very interesting. After instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestations, disappeared from their presence. Following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Dadichi, the son of Atharva. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. O elevated demigods, at the time of death, severe, unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Don't you know about this pain? In this material world, every living entity is very much addicted to his material body. Struggling to keep his body forever, everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of all his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it were demanded by Lord Vishnu? So, in his heart, he's agreed. But he's giving them, they say jokingly, he's saying, how could you expect me to give up my body? This is a rather heavy request, you know. Could we borrow your bones? So he responds in this way. The demigods have to give him a Bhagavatam class. Oh, exalted Brahman, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can't such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, he who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity. So they're giving him lessons in compassion. Of course, they are the beggars, in this case, asking charity. So Dadichi Muni has, in effect, said to them, don't you know how much pain it would be, is going to be for me to give up my body? And they turn it around and say, well, you know, if a person who's being asked for something knows the pain of the person who's asking, they will certainly give it. So again, all this distress over because of their material attachments and their material opulence, they're just trying to protect their kingdom. Just contrast this to the behavior, for example, of Maharaj Yudhisthira. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But you know, Yudhisthira Maharaj he gave up his kingdom, and many other saintly persons, they were quite willing to give up their opulence for a higher cause. Didichi said, just to hear from you about religious principles, I refuse to offer my body at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings, such as rocks. If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living beings and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated as imperishable by exalted persons who are considered pious and benevolent. This body, which is eaten by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. So this very nice exchange here between Tadichi. First, Tadichi refuses just to hear what the demigods will say, and they give him very politely some good religious instruction, and then he responds with even deeper instructions, more explicit, which in a way is telling them, right, about their own attachments. Even though your body may have a very long lifetime, you also have to give it up. And so better for me to use my body in sacrifice than, in effect, he's saying, than being like you. So even though he's performing this great sacrifice for them, he takes the opportunity to give them instruction. This is also the quality of a saintly person. This is reminiscent a bit of the story of Marichi in the Ramayana. You remember Marichi had been requested by Ravana to transform himself by his mystic power into the body of a deer to attract Sita. So Marichi said, I know the power of these brothers, Ram and Lakshman, because I saw them kill my mother. And if I do this, they will surely kill me. So Ravana said, okay, and if you don't do it, I'm going to kill you right now. So Didichi thought, okay, I can be killed by Ram or I can be killed by Ravana. So better to be killed by Ram. Therefore, he agreed to do it. So in Didichi Muni's case, his realization is even deeper. That he says, everybody is going to lose their body. Everyone is going to have to give it up. So better I give it up for a higher purpose to benefit others than just try to hang on to it till the very end of my life. Who would like to read the purport? Yes. Just hold it down. Just hold it down. Okay?
As indicated by the words Pagai Bhagavati Brahmani Atmanam Sanneyan, Tadichi placed himself as spirit soul at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, one may refer to the incident of Dhritarashtra leaving his body, as described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhritarashtra analytically divided his gross material body into five different elements of which it was made, earth, water, fire, air and ether, and distributed them to the different reservoirs of these elements. In other words, he merged these five elements into the original Mahat-tattva. By identifying his material conception of life, he gradually separated his spirit soul from material connections and placed himself at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example given in this connection is that when an earthen pot is broken, The small portion of the sky within the pot is united with the large sky outside the pot. Mayavadi philosophers misunderstood this description of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Sri Ramanuja Swami in his book Vedanta Tattva Sara has described that this merging of the soul means that after separating himself from the material body made of 8 elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, mind and intelligence, the individual soul engages himself in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. The material cause of the material elements absorbs the material body and the spiritual soul assumes its original position. As described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiveha Swarupahaya Krishnara Nityadas, the constitutional position of the living entity is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. When one overcomes the material body through cultivation of spiritual knowledge and devotional service, one can revive his position and thus engage in the service of the Lord.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So this explains the method by which Tadichi gave up his body. The same method of mystic yoga that was incorporated by Dhritarashtra. Now, in Dhritarashtra's case, why did he choose this particular form of yoga? Do you recall this pastime when Bidura comes, tells him, you're going to die, and he says, you're right, I'm living a degraded life. He immediately leaves the palace. Go, Paul. Yes, because he could not bring himself to chant his rounds, to surrender to Krishna. So he used this mystic power instead. Vidura was a great devotee, and Vidura had no problem giving his homage to Krishna, but Dhritarashtra could not bring himself to do it. At one point, before the battle, just to try to prevent this huge battle, horrible battle of Kurukshetra, the Lord had come to Dhritarashtra, who was blind, and shown him by mystic power this universal form, the same form that Arjuna saw in the battlefield. And in this way, he was trying to show Dhritarashtra that you're not going to win this battle. Your sons are not going to win. Because all along, Dhritarashtra could have stopped it. But Dhritarashtra was so envious of Krishna and so blind spiritually, Prabhupada says, that he would not, even when seeing the universal form, he wouldn't surrender. So he had to choose this mystic process. So this mystic process is like the culmination of us understanding we're not this body. It's one thing to say that, to mouth those words, that I'm not this body. And it's an important start to our spiritual realization. But to come to the point of internalizing that so deeply that you actually separate yourself from the elements of your body, that is quite a gulf of difference, isn't it? From a philosophical idea to being able to do that. But Dadichi, by his great realization, was able to do that on demand as soon as he decided to. He simply separated himself from the physical elements of his body, and they re-entered the aggregate total of all these various elements. Excuse me. You know how the Bhagavatam describes that the earth is like a small pocket within a coconut, pocket of air, but then it's covered with these ever-increasing layers of material energy. Earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So these various material coverings exist in their pradhan, in their unmanifest way, and then pieces of them are put together into material bodies according to the desires of the living entities. And then when the living entities give up their body, then the elements return. So this is the mystic process that can be achieved by those highly advanced yogis, highly elevated yogis. They can do it deliberately. So for the devotee, it is an easier process. We don't have to worry about where the material elements of our bodies go. Why is that? What's that? Well, everybody's different from the body. But why do we not have to go to this mystic yoga process? Yes, that's right. The devotee remembers Krishna at the time of death. And what else about the body of a devotee? That's right. Yes, it's because the body is used in Krishna's service that we don't have to worry about these mystic processes. You know, yoginam api sarvesham magatenam taratmana. It is the best of all mystic yoga processes. Also in the eighth chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Vedeshu, Yageshu, Tapishu, Chaiva, Daneshu, Yat Punya Palam Pradishtam. Teti Yat Sarvamidam Viditva. The benefits you'd get from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifice, doing austerities, any mystic power you might gain are all included by performing devotional service. So it's not necessary to have this kind of mystic power. In Dadichi's case, that was his perfection. In Dhritarashtra's case, that was his choice. So Dadichi chose this means to give up his body as well and made his bones available to the demigods. So tomorrow, or rather Monday, Sesha Prabhu will take up the story from this point. I wanted to focus a little more on the subject of sacrifice. Just consider what a sacrifice this was for Dadichi. And he joked about it first. Well, you know, I need my body for my body is just everything. And pain and death is very painful. There's another incident in the ninth canto coming up when Maharaj Yayati got in trouble for mistreating the daughter of, I believe it was Shukracharya, yes. He married her, but then he got interested in another girl, and then he got his father-in-law quite upset with him. So his father-in-law said, "You are so lusty that you just become an old man right away." So he, Yayati, very quickly ages. And then he begged his father-in-law, "Please don't do this to me. I have so many material desires." And he said, "You can get rid of this curse if one of your sons will exchange their youth for your old age." So he asked his sons variously, and they gave replies like this, like Dadichi was jokingly, but they were serious. And I said, "Father, I can't possibly do that. I have so many desires, and then how will I fulfill my desires?" So they all refused him, except the youngest son, finally, Puru, I believe. Right? And he gave him, said, "Yes, Father, I will do this for you," immediately. So because of his devotion, Puru gave up his... He accepted his father's curse, but then he was also relieved of it. So anyway, we'll discuss that next semester. But this was a similar example. You know, so what are we giving up our bodies for? You know, it is a fact that everybody gives up their body for something. Some people give up their bodies for couches, TVs, and potato chips, you know, and remote controls. Nothing is sweeter than just lying back on a couch, eating far more calories than required, and watching the television. You know, as your body becomes more obese, your arteries become full of fat. And it's very reminiscent of a pig in a mud pile, isn't it? You know, they're just rolling around, enjoying life, and no idea what's going to happen to them, or concern. I mean, there are people who gain so much weight living like this that they exceed 1,000 pounds, if you can imagine. They become so obese that they can no longer exit the door from their bedroom. They have to... you think I'm making this up? They actually have to bring in carpenters to cut open additional space in the door so that they can get out, so they can be taken out. And to get them in the ambulance, they have to use a sling for livestock. So one way or the other, you're going to sacrifice your body What is the value of a life lived like that, just for sense gratification? It is doing nothing to benefit other people. Many years ago, my wife and I had a business associate who told us something that we mused about. He said, the more you do for people, the less they appreciate you. A cynical statement. What do you think about that? He said, the more you do for people, the less they appreciate you. Well, there's some wisdom in that. There's some practical wisdom in that, because if you just give and give and give to someone who is not appreciative, then they will take you for granted, right? So that has some practical wisdom in daily life. But in the larger sense, it's a very foolish thought, because why does Dadichi Muni give up his body? Why does Yudhisthira stick to Dharma and refuse to fight his cousins, even when all of his brothers are begging him to do it? In fact, why does Yudhisthira, even after Duryodhana is captured by the Gandharvas, as the Gandharvas overpowered Duryodhana and his army when they came to make fun of the Pandavas, they overpowered them and they bound them up, the leaders of the Kurus, and they brought them to Yudhisthira. And Bhima was ecstatic. He said, what we did not do, the Gandharvas have done for us. So Yudhisthira ordered them released. So why would Yudhisthira do that? Why would the Dadichi do that? What is the motivation? In very simple terms, boiling it down to its essence, why do they do such sacrifices? What's that? Compassion? I'm going to ask you to be even more fundamental than that. Mm-hmm. It's pleasing to Krishna if one acts without motivation. Okay? But even more fundamentally than that. Okay, yes, it is an expression of compassion. Yes, it is an offering to Krishna. Those things are inevitable. But why? To keep things less complex? Yes, it does that too, but why? Still, why would one be motivated? Would you really be motivated to give up your body just to keep things less complex? I mean, it will certainly accomplish that. Selflessness, okay. Why would you be so selfless? So they're observing the religious principles for the pleasure of the Lord rather than any relative. Yes, they're doing that, but why? Yes, this is the point. It's first part of what you said is pleasing to the soul. They're doing it for their own pleasure. See, this is Ananda Maya Vyasat. Every living entity is seeking pleasure. But these great souls know how to get pleasure. Prabhupada said, in terms of Krishna consciousness, that everybody wants to enjoy, but they do not know how to enjoy. See? They think they're enjoying by drinking beer and going to raves and, you know, I mean, yesterday, some devotees ate gulab jamuns to the point of nearly wanting to return them to their original elements. But this is a regular function for many people to just drink this fermented, you know, horrible tasting stuff until they want to disgorge it. So, you know, they don't know how to enjoy. Yeah, we enjoy chanting and dancing, but even that is, you know, we do it because it's fun. You know, we do Krishna conscious things because they're enjoyable, they're pleasurable, and even if they're materially austere and we're making a sacrifice, we do it because we know by experience we're going to be happier having made the sacrifice than if we had not made the sacrifice. Is that not a fact? So this is taking this to complete self-sacrifice. What more can you give? You know, Dadichi is giving his very body. So he's doing it because he knows he's going to be happier doing it than not doing it. This is the point of all sacrifice. If we understand this principle, it's very helpful in relationships. For example, Gopal mentioned compassion. So compassion is the most elevated of Vaishnava qualities. Prabhupada quoted the poet Cowper, I believe, who said, "The quality of mercy is not strained, but falleth as a gentle rain from heaven." So you can't force yourself, "I'm going to be compassionate for this person." But when you're actually compassionate, then it just comes upon you. Okay, this person. So how to become compassionate? How to be compassionate? This is related to the point of sacrifice. It is not for the sake of the person to whom we are being compassionate. And this is the mistake. So we think, okay, I'll be compassionate to this person to help them out. It's not for their sake, it's for our sake. See? If somebody does something really terrible to you, and many of us carry resentment and anger to somebody who has hurt us for years and years and years, right? So who's losing? We're the ones who are being hurt because our hearts are full of resentment. So why should we forgive them? Because it's a nice thing to do? No, so we can get rid of the resentment. What did Lakshmimoni Prabhu say the other day? I'm going to kill somebody by drinking poison. And we're just hurting ourselves. See, by being unable to forgive, we just hurt ourselves. So we forgive others so we can be feel better, so we can be happier. Ananda Maya Vyasa. Similarly, we make sacrifice to benefit others so we'll feel happy. And if people are so poor-hearted that they don't know these things, then their lives are very, very unfortunate. They don't know how to forgive, and they don't know how to make sacrifice. They don't know how to work for the benefit of others. Therefore, their lives are extremely self-centered, and they're the most miserable people. So this is practical, practical psychology we can learn. How to be happy. This is the whole point of Krishna consciousness. How to be happy. What is the use of getting up from Mangal Arati and chanting Hare Krishna otherwise, you know? There was once a man who, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, the government was very suspicious. What is this organization? So they enlisted one person to move into the Boston temple, shave his head, put on saffron, and be a brahmachari. And so he did this for several months. You know, going to the RTs and doing everything, because they were suspecting the devotees must be dealing drugs. Otherwise, what are they doing? They got so many people living here. They're doing these strange rituals. So after several months, the man came to the temple president and said, "All right, I'm come clean. I am a Navy SEAL, and I was ordered to check you guys out, and you're clean, so I'm leaving. And by the way," he said, "this was harder than the Navy." So how can it be possible to do what we do in Krishna consciousness unless we're enjoying it? And if we're not enjoying, then we should know there's something wrong. You see, if we're not being happy by the sacrifice, then we should know that there's some mantras being chanted improperly. Something is wrong, and then we need help. And this is very good. This is a good way to lead a constructive life, is to always be trying to adjust things so that we are getting the maximum happiness. And Krishna consciousness teaches us how to do that by finding the internal happiness rather than the external happiness. See, otherwise, the intelligence has always used how to make things right on the outside, but it's always a failure. When you make them right on the inside, then it's always a success, no matter what may be happening externally. So that's a few thoughts about sacrifice. There's beautiful verses in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita on sacrifice, but perhaps now at this point there's some questions or comments. Can we use the mic, please? By the way, would one Brahmin kindly make the offering this morning? Anybody be available to do that? Gopal, can you do that? Thank you, Prabhu. Yes.
As it is said that best security is to give up insecurity. So similarly, if we are looking for happiness and that is our basis for sacrificing, then how will that be called sacrifice then?
Yes, if we're just looking to benefit ourselves, then how is it a sacrifice? It is a sacrifice of sense gratification. It's a sacrifice of the effort to enjoy materially. See, that's what is being sacrificed. So it's really giving up foolishness. You see, just like you said, the way to security is giving up insecurity. So Prabhupada put it like this. In Krishna consciousness, all we are asking you to give up are your miseries. So it's very fuel efficient if you think about it. We're just putting things in the fire that we don't want, into the fire of sacrifice. We don't want insecurity. We don't want unhappiness. We don't want attachment, because attachment always ends in frustration. So we're just getting rid of all of this unnecessary stuff. That's why the word is used, anartha. Anartha means unnecessary. So what we are sacrificing is very appropriate to sacrifice.
Like, so in sacrifice, we do not think of ourselves. We think of the other person.
No, that's not correct. That's my whole point. We do sacrifice because we are thinking of ourselves. We do sacrifice because it will benefit us. We do sacrifice because it will make us happy. Otherwise, we won't do sacrifice. We will not be able to sustain sacrifice. You see? It's fine to think in those terms. That's why I'm saying how Yudhisthira could do what he did. Or Didichi could do what he did. Or we can continue practicing Krishna consciousness, because it makes us happy. Okay, and it's perfect. See, that's called enlightened self-interest. It's counterintuitive, right? To give money to someone. It's working against yourself, because you will have less money and the other person will have it, and then you can't use it anymore. And yet people give in this country more than $120 billion a year in charity. Why is that? Because they have all the money they want to spend on stuff, you know, and they find out that it's not making them happy. They get more happiness giving it away. You see?
It's also said that...
Please into the mic.
That demons also sacrifice, thinking that they are gods. So what is the difference between that type of sacrifice and like the devotees?
There we get into the object of sacrifice. See, bhoktaram yagya tapasam. The demons they understand the principle of sacrifice, giving of myself, but their strategy for achieving happiness is to acquire more material power. You understand? So therefore, they will make sacrifice in the mode of ignorance, as discussed in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks Krishna, what about religious ceremony or religious activities that are performed in the various modes of nature? And so Krishna says that those who offer sacrifice to demons are in the mode of ignorance. So, and then Prabhupada, I believe in that purport, gives the example of Hitler and others, or some man who worshipped Hitler. That was the idea. So, if we are after some kind of material benefit out of our sacrifice, this is a sacrifice in the mode of ignorance. But a Krishna conscious sacrifice is done only to please Krishna. And why? Because we realize we're going to get a lot more happiness when Krishna is pleased than by acquiring some more material facility. So it is in our enlightened self-interest. Okay, microphone, please.
There has been a little change in the discussion. Now you said it's to please Krishna. So and it is also understood that pleasing Krishna and pleasing us is they go together. The real happiness to the soul comes when he pleases Krishna. So that understanding is there. But I can still think of one level higher, is that of pastime of gopis giving dust to relieve Krishna's headache to Narad Muni. And they said that even if you go to hell, we are willing to do that if we can remove Krishna's headache for a moment. And other devotees were worrying about their own happiness.
Yeah, they refused.
Yeah. So in the spiritual platform, we understand that our pleasure, our real pleasure will be when Krishna will be pleased. So then there is no difference in thinking of our real self-interest in knowledge is same as pleasing Krishna.
Yes.
But this gopi's example seems a little more higher than that.
But the gopi's happiness in pleasing Krishna that way was so attractive that Krishna himself wanted to find out what it's like. So that is, it is a higher level, but it's still done for the purpose of happiness. Gopi bhav. They're just enjoying on the highest level. You see? So yes, Krishna is the object of sacrifice, but it's still done for the enjoyment of the person who's making the sacrifice. Yes, the gopis are giving dust, saying, I'll go to hell. That's all right, as long as Krishna's pleased. Do you think that they were seeing a therapist about that decision? Oh, I gave the dust from my feet to Krishna, and now I'm going to hell. I don't know if I should have done it. No, they have no misgivings. They're ecstatic. They are very...
They were going to hell.
Yes.
They really meant it, and they did not apply knowledge that actually we will not go to hell.
No. Because that's because they're on the spontaneous platform. They have gone so far beyond the mental platform. Well, maybe I'll be happier if I don't give this to Krishna. See, like even those great sages who refused, they were so far beyond that platform of doubt. See, that they're on spontaneously without even thinking. And it is, it's a little reminiscent of the relationship between like Vasudev and Krishna and Nanda Maharaj and Krishna. You know, Vasudev is always making some calculation. He's Krishna's father. And he's sent him, he took him to Gokul. And then he's, first of all, even when he appeared in the cell, right? Vasudev and Devaki were thinking, oh no, he's got four arms. Please come in two arms. Because they were calculating. Oh, maybe if he has two arms, then Kamsa won't know that he's God. So then, and on many other occasions also, he was calculating. It could bring the prasadam? Thank you. So Vasudeva would think like this. So there was some mental process there. But Nanda Maharaj never thought like that. And Vasudeva warned him, you better get back to Gokula because there might be trouble. And then Nanda Maharaj was always scratching his head saying, wow, and Vasudeva said there might be trouble, and sure enough, I came back and there was trouble. How does Nanda Maharaj know this? I mean, how does Vasudeva know this? He must be clairvoyant. So Nanda Maharaj was on the spontaneous platform, on the higher platform. He could not calculate in terms of how Krishna is involved. He just loved Krishna. See, whereas Vasudeva was calculating, well, I don't want Krishna to die. So, similarly, the gopis are not calculating. They don't care. They are completely, spontaneously wanting to please Krishna. And that's the nature of pleasure, isn't it? If something pleases us over and over and over again, we start doing it spontaneously. You know? We just start doing it without thinking. So that's the great sign of advancement in Krishna consciousness. We chant not because we think about it, but because it's pleasurable, because it's enjoyable. And if we haven't come to the point where chanting is enjoyable, at least if we come to the point where not chanting is miserable, that's a good step. Any other comments or questions? What is the source of that calculation? The source of the calculation is the mind. Because the mind is accepting and rejecting based on previous experiences of pleasure.
That is only true in material world?
It's true in the material world. It's true for the living entity at all times. But in terms of Krishna's pastimes and the devotees, they're different rasas, different moods, and Krishna is enjoying them all. So he enjoys the attitude of Vasudev. And at the same time, he prefers the spontaneous love of a parent. For example, after Kamsa was killed, Krishna went to see... the first thing he wanted to do is what? Yes, he wanted to free his parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, who had been kept in prison. First thing. And so they had been in prison, and they were listening to all these descriptions. Oh, Krishna killed the elephant. And then Krishna killed the wrestlers. And then Krishna killed Kamsa. So they're hearing all these things in prison. And they're thinking, wow, our son is really something. And by the time that Kamsa's dead, they think he must be God. So when he shows up to free them from jail, they cannot bring themselves to do anything but offer obeisances. See? So this is the mental effect. They're thinking Krishna must be God, because just logically, based on everything they've seen, he must be God. And Krishna does not like it. So he immediately begins speaking in a certain way. He says, oh, I'm sure if we had been brought up in your house, we would have had been so fortunate. We would have had such a nice childhood, because you're obviously such great parents. He's speaking in this way and lamenting, oh, I did not get to be raised by you. So hearing this, Vasudev and Devaki become filled with parental affection. And then they're able to embrace him, which is what he wanted. See? So the mental platform was keeping them, in a way, from manifesting that rasa that Krishna really wanted. But all of their activities are, you know, are transcendental. What is that? Yes. Well, as we progress, our devotional service becomes more spontaneous. It begins. Let's say a prayer for a moment. Excuse me. Sarira vijajal datendriya tahi kal jive pile visaya sagare taramadhya jivayati lobhamoy sadurmati taki jeta katina samsare krishna bodhadoyamoy kori bara jiva joy swaprasad anadelo bhai sayanam ritapa radha krishna gunagal premidako chaitanya nitai dani mai janitai shila prabhupad ki jai. I think there may be some spontaneous retribution from yesterday's water balloon fight going on in prasadam distribution this morning, right? Somebody's remembering, oh, I'm not going to serve you. I remember what you did to me yesterday. yes, Vaibhav, our service does become more spontaneous. There's so many examples, just like... initially, one might not like to give up certain foods, but after eating prasad for some time, then one feels very satisfied and does not have any inclination like that. At first, one may not like to get up early and attend kirtan, but after some time, one realizes not only is it nice to attend kirtan early, but getting up even earlier, one can have time to read and write or do other things early in the morning. It's very peaceful. See? So all of this is achieved by experience. And being able to tune into that higher taste is a great success in our spiritual lives. So, that all right? Yes. And all of these great souls who are associated with Krishna's pastimes are already on this extremely elevated platform, you know. They're not, they're just expressing different rasas. That's all. So the concerned parent rasa is found in Vasudeva and Devaki. And Nanda, of course, is also concerned, but he just has no idea that Krishna could be God. And whenever, sometimes Yashoda expresses a little bit of realization on this. And then Krishna immediately covers her over. She doesn't even get to the point of being able to act on it. So Vasudev and Devaki are considered on a lesser level than Nanda and Yashoda. The spontaneous love. But it's all, it is all absolute expressions of spontaneous love. Just different flavors. Krishna, what is that word? Akila rasa something. He's the taster of all rasas. Well, rasa rasa, yeah. He's the king of them all. But akila rasa something. Anyway, it specifically says about Krishna that he enjoys the taste of each rasa. And there are many different ones. Okay, anything else? Garrison? I think we're still taping, so go ahead.
Is it just by some stroke of luck that the Rajavasis get to develop that unalloyed love for Krishna like that, or is it the desire?
No. This is a matter of desire. They had previously desired to have this particular rasa with Krishna. They were great sages, right? Because Ram, right, had taken this ekapatni rut. He was only going to have one wife, although kings would often have many. So these sages were disappointed, and therefore in his next life, or in his next incarnation, Krishna accepted so many wives. All right, anything else? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai.